What if you woke up tomorrow and discovered that everything you owned, your house, your clothes, even your money, suddenly belonged to everyone? Sounds terrifying, right? Yet in 1516, Thomas More imagined exactly this scenario and called it paradise. His fictional island of Utopia operates on a principle that would make most of us deeply uncomfortable: the complete abolition of private property. But here's the twist. More wasn't simply describing a fantasy. He was holding up a mirror to his own society, and by extension, to ours. On this imaginary island, houses rotate among families every decade. Meals happen in communal dining halls. Clothing comes from shared storehouses. Gold, that universal symbol of wealth and power, gets fashioned into chamber pots and children's toys. When foreign ambassadors arrive, dripping in jewels and gold chains, utopian children point and laugh, confused why adults would wear playthings. The scene is deliberately absurd, yet it reveals something profound. What we consider valuable is entirely constructed by our culture. The utopians have simply chosen to construct it differently. Without money or possessions to hoard, theft becomes meaningless. Status anxiety evaporates. Everyone works just 6 hours daily, yet produces abundance because everyone contributes. This isn't naive idealism. More anticipates every objection we might raise about motivation and human nature, then systematically dismantles them. Physical spaces shape who we become more than we realize. Utopia's 54 identical cities embody equality through architecture. Each follows the same grid pattern, contains identical public buildings, and houses the same number of households. The capital, Amarat, exemplifies this. Three-story buildings with glass windows and flat roofs in continuous rows. Most remarkably, none have locks. Consider what a lock represents: boundaries between mine and yours, public and private, trust and suspicion. Utopian houses lack locks because nothing belongs exclusively to anyone. Behind each row stretch gardens where families compete not for wealth, but for beauty and productivity, channeling competitive instincts toward community enhancement. The island itself was deliberately created. Originally a peninsula, King Eutopus ordered a 15-mile channel dug to separate it from the mainland. This founding act symbolizes something crucial. Creating a genuinely new society requires a clean break from existing structures. You can't reform your way to radical change. Sometimes you need to dig a channel and start fresh. Utopia's 6-hour workday creates abundance through universal contribution. 3 hours before lunch, a 2-hour midday rest, 3 hours after. The remaining time goes to intellectual pursuits, community engagement, and genuine rest. Everyone learns farming from childhood, regardless of their primary trade. Households rotate members to rural farms for 2-year terms, preventing a permanent peasant class. Beyond farming, citizens master specific trades: textiles, masonry, blacksmithing, carpentry. Children typically follow their father's occupation, but those drawn elsewhere can transfer through adoption. The genius lies in how remaining time gets used. Many attend public lectures before dawn. After dinner, they enjoy garden recreation or educational board games. Gambling is unknown. This reveals More's deeper argument: leisure can fuel intellectual growth rather than mere consumption. Modern debates about work-life balance and universal basic income echo these insights. More understood that reduced working hours need not mean reduced productivity, and that how we spend non-working time matters as much as the work itself. Every 30 families elect a magistrate. These magistrates elect a ruler from 4 candidates who serves for life unless suspected of tyranny. No public matter gets decided without 3 days of Senate discussion. Conspiring on state matters outside official venues carries a death penalty. Utopia's designers understood that corruption isn't an aberration, it's the default unless actively prevented. Without private property, officials have no incentive for bribery. When everyone's basic needs are guaranteed, the temptation to abuse power diminishes. Neighboring nations frequently request utopians as magistrates, recognizing their incorruptibility. Moore crafts a devastating critique of European governance. Advisors manipulating laws for profit, pressuring judges, keeping people poor to maintain control. When Raphael argues that a king's honor depends on his people's wealth, that poverty breeds rebellion, his words fall on deaf ears. As counselor to Henry VIII, Moore understood the moral compromises politics demands. He would eventually be executed for refusing to compromise his principles regarding Henry's divorce, making his exploration of political integrity a lived reality.
In Moore's England, stealing bread meant execution, yet crime persisted. Raphael challenges this brutality. Theft doesn't warrant death, and punishment fails when people lack survival alternatives. His revolutionary insight? Address root causes, not symptoms. Utopia identifies two groups forced into crime: disabled veterans unable to learn new trades, and noblemen's retainers raised in idle luxury who become unemployable when masters die. By ensuring everyone has meaningful work and necessities, Utopia eliminates economic motivations for theft. For actual criminals, the system emphasizes rehabilitation. Serious offenses result in servitude. Criminals work for public good while wearing distinctive clothing with marked ears. Those demonstrating reform gain freedom. This provides societal benefit through labor, visible deterrent, and redemption. Only the persistently rebellious face execution. The system also punishes intent rather than outcomes, treating attempted and completed crimes equally, a sophisticated framework anticipating modern legal concepts. Here's where Utopia gets uncomfortable. Despite peaceful domestic life, these enlightened people maintain sophisticated military capabilities and engage in colonial expansion. When population pressures mount, they establish colonies on uncultivated mainland territories. Natives accepting utopian customs get welcomed. Those refusing get driven out. The justification? It's just to claim idle land, a rationalization echoing European colonial arguments. Their warfare reveals contradictions. Soldiers wear armor designed for protection and maneuverability. They can even swim in it. They prefer battle axes to swords, excel with arrows, and develop mobile siege engines. Yet they conduct warfare with restraint, observing truces religiously, avoiding civilian harm, executing only those who prevented surrender, enslaving combatants but sparing non-combatants. This paradox reveals something crucial. While envisioning radical equality within utopian society, Moore couldn't escape his era's colonial mindset. The utopians' belief in claiming underutilized land mirrors justifications European powers used for expansion, a blind spot in otherwise incisive social critique. Utopia isn't simple blueprint, but complex thought experiment reflecting both revolutionary insights and historical limitations. Can any society maintain internal harmony without external aggression? The name Utopia means both good place and no place in Greek, desirable yet unattainable. Moore employs irony throughout. Raphael Hythlodes' name combines God's healer with peddler of nonsense, suggesting his account might be simultaneously enlightening and misleading. The dialogue deliberately avoids resolution. The character Moore remains skeptical about abolishing private property, concluding, "In the utopian commonwealth are very many features which in our societies I would wish rather than expect to see." This ambiguity explains Utopia's enduring influence. Socialists claim it as early communism, religious communities see monastic parallels, critics point to its regimentation as cautionary. Utopia functions not as practical blueprint, but as discursive space for reimagining social arrangements. By presenting radically different organizational principles, Moore invites questioning assumptions about property, work, justice, and governance that might otherwise seem inevitable. The final paradox? While specific arrangements may remain unattainable, imagining alternatives remains essential for progress. The real power of Utopia isn't in its solutions, it's in teaching us to question whether things must be as they are.